So would you guys all have a meeting this afternoon and decide the whole thing? Don't give me that shit. Because you guys knew it.
I swear to God.
You knew it from the very beginning. All of you.
I swear to God, I knew nothing about
this. Yeah, well, swear to God all you want. Someday God is going to strike you down.
I mean...
Yeah.
I know you're upset, but...
No, I am upset.
I had nothing to do. I didn't know anything about this.
You had just as much to do with it as the rest of them. Just remember someday, Hunter, what goes around comes around.
It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster.
Conquered! I'm home!
You like fighting a woman?
You're saying Vince McMahon is stupid. Is that what you're saying?
Oh my God, we're only an hour in. We have two more hours of this.
SmackDown sucks. It's almost as bad as Raw.
Who writes this stuff? Bruce?
Come over here and fight me!
I'm the Solo Monster, damn it.
Solo Monster? Who are you to doubt El Dandy?
This was the week that the game truly ended for Triple H. First, they killed his baby, and now they have dismantled his team. I've got a lot to say about why all of this is happening. Thoughts on the releases of Samoa Joe again, and William Regal, among others. WWE teasing a winner-take-all match for WrestleMania between Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns. Why it's not going to happen, and where I believe things are headed at the Royal Rumble. A lot of you may not like it, but I will tell you why it makes sense. I've got an injury update on Sasha Banks. Thoughts on the reigning Impact Knockouts champion, who successfully defended her title in the main event of last night's Hard to Kill pay-per-view, appearing in the Women's Royal Rumble match. I believe they made history last night as the first all-women's match to main event at Impact pay-per-view. But that's not all. I've got more on one of the most gruesome injuries that I have ever seen in wrestling. And shockingly, the news is not nearly as bad as it could have been. I've got reviews for last night's Battle of the Belt special on TNT. And both nights of Wrestle Kingdom at the Tokyo Dome. And later, it is one of your favorite sound-offs of the year. The annual prediction show is here, where I look back on what I got right and what I got wrong in 2021, and I will give my predictions for 2022. So how's that sound for a packed lineup? Let's get to it. This is episode 738 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, January 9th, 2022. I am the Solo Monster. Give the show 5 stars, all the stars in the sky. On Apple Podcasts, and now on Spotify as well. They've now added a rating system. Matt Stryker is out, by the way, as the play-by-play announcer for Impact. I guess they didn't care for his work. So he has been replaced by former WWE announcer Tom Phillips, once being groomed to be the voice of SmackDown, until Fox said they wanted Michael Cole and Pat McAfee. And that's what they got. Anyway, he now joins D'Lo Brown in the booth, started last night at the Hard to Kill pay-per-view. This Friday night, live on Fight TV, House of Glory presents its Who Runs the World one-night women's tournament to crown a brand new House of Glory women's champion. We've got Deonna Purrazzo, who was just in that main event last night at the Impact pay-per-view. Mercedes Martinez, new AEW signing, is going to be in the tournament. Jordynne Grace, Santana Garrett, Sumi Sakai, Janae Kai, Violet, the former Hog Women's Champion Violet, and Natalia Markova have all been announced for the tournament. I will be on the call with JD from New York, bell time 8 p.m., and since I will be there, that means no SmackDown and Rampage stream this Friday, so just be aware of that. If you want to make a PayPal donation and support the podcast, become one of our PayPal producers, you may do so at thesolomonster.com. You'll see the PayPal button on the right-hand side of the page. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out, including these fine folks. Early roll call here for the new year. The Portland pop star Paul Hamilton, Night Stalker Nayef Alsafar, John Loose Cannon Lopez, West Coast James Herrera, Big Bear, Brian Becerra, Out of Control, Cody Thomas, Beast Mode, Brock Joseph, Killshot, Keith Hart, Fast Blast Tim Banks, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, The Chicago Slayer Willie Eichard, The Diamond Dallas Dance Machine Harrison Soep, New York Punk Arnold Modesto, John Raging Mad Riffle, Caleb Showtime Lindley, Malevolent Michael Timoney, Renato Real Man Luciforo. What's going on, Renato? Haven't heard your name in a while. Howard the Duck Donnie from Scorp 18 Talks Wrestling. That's all one word. Talking wrestling with a comedy twist on YouTube. That is Scorp, the number 18 Talks Wrestling. And this is always a fun announcement to make here. It is Royal Rumble season, in case you didn't know. And that means that it is also Royal Rumble pool season in the private group on Facebook. It is that time of year. Last year, we had 60 pools with more than 1,800 entries. We already have over 1,000 entries so far this year, and I haven't even mentioned it yet here on the podcast. This is the first time. To enter, just find Zach Holker's Rumble pool post pinned to the top of the page in the announcement section in the private group. Find that post, and all you got to do is hit the like button. That's it. Like the post, and you're in. Numbers are going to be issued to everybody the Saturday before the Royal Rumble, so 1 week before. You can still enter the contest up until a few hours, though, before the pay-per-view the day of. And the way it works, if you've never been part of this before, is that each person who enters will receive a random number. So a random number will be assigned to you. That's going to be issued by Zach. That number will be your number for both the men's and the women's Royal Rumble matches. So let's say, for example, if you draw the number 20 and the number 20 entrant in either or both of those Rumble matches goes on to win, then you would win your pool. And that's just for bragging rights, but then you would move on to the ultimate Rumble pool. And the people who finish first, second, and third place in that final pool will win prizes, which will be announced soon. In Zach's post, by the way, you will also find a link to another little sub-contest, courtesy of our good friend Julian Cannon. There is a link to a form that you can fill out where you can try to guess the exact time, bell to bell, of how long either the men's or the women's Rumble match will last. You got to list it in hours, minutes, and seconds. So you got to nail this right on the nose. This year, the prize is two video games of your choice and a controller of your choice. This is all coming from Julian. I'm just the middleman here. Last year, nobody won the contest, so he donated the prize to a local children's hospital here in New York. So when you find Zach's post, look for the link to that as well. If you are not in the private group, you'll have to search for it and apply for membership to get in. I'll have to approve you. My thanks to Zach for hosting, as he does every year. He puts a lot of work and a lot of time into this. And Julian for his contributions as well. I can't believe that we have been doing these for almost a decade now. That first year, we had five pools with 150 Sound Off fans. So we have come a long way since then. This November marks 25 years since the Montreal Screwjob. And that famous moment from Wrestling with Shadows backstage at the Molson Center where Julie Hart, Bret's wife, tears into Triple H, who stands there claiming to have no knowledge about what happened that night. He swore to God that he didn't know. Much the same way that Shawn Michaels swore to God to Bret in the backstage area that he wasn't in on it. His hands are clean. He's got nothing to do with any of this. Of course, he was in on it. He was lying through his teeth. And Triple H knew about it as well. In fact, he may have been the person most responsible for things playing out the way they did. Because the week before the show, when they were trying to figure out what to do and how to handle this, he was the one who supposedly piped up and said, fuck him. If he won't do business, you'll do it for him. But there he stood in this documentary like a coward, with his head down, couldn't even make eye contact with the man's wife. And she told Triple H, just remember, what goes around comes around. Here we are 25 years later, and it has come back around to Triple H in the form of the Stanford Screwjob. First, we had Tommaso Ciampa losing his NXT championship to Bron Breakker at New Year's Evil, complete with Breaker destroying part of the old NXT logo during his entrance, something that was said to not be well received backstage and was taken as a message, because of course it was. And then the very next day came our first wave of releases for 2022. They didn't even wait a week before starting with the releases again. The first of many that you can expect this year. They gutted more of the NXT and Performance Center staff. This was more about staff than talent. But the two biggest names involved in these cuts were Samoa Joe, who was fired for the second time in 9 months. They fired this fucking guy twice in less than a year. And the other name being William Regal, after 21 years with the company. Imagine thinking that you have no use anymore for someone with the experience and the knowledge that William Regal has. And I have to issue a correction. I was wrong when I said on Tuesday night on my NXT stream that the Black and Gold brand was officially laid to rest at New Year's Evil. It actually died the following afternoon. If people there considered Dusty Rhodes to be the heart and soul of NXT, he considered them his kids, you know, his NXT kids. Everybody always talks glowingly about Dusty and his time there and what he meant to them. Then William Regal, in many ways, was probably the spiritual successor after Dusty passed away. He tweeted, though, that he is grateful for the time he spent in the company and they have allowed him to live a very charmed life. So ever the gentleman, he's taking the high road. Samoa Joe was relegated to announce duty on Monday Night Raw after a bad concussion that he suffered. He was filming a commercial. I think it was it might have been a Monday Night Raw commercial. I don't think it was a video game commercial, but whatever it was, that latest concussion, that latest injury that sidelined him was not an injury that he sustained in the ring on TV, you know, in a real match or at a major show. It was during a commercial shoot. And he got, you know, banged up pretty bad. And eventually they transitioned him, at least temporarily, into an announce role. And that was the role that he filled for them until WrestleMania 37. And there he was, standing outside in the rain in his poncho, looking like a giant Trojan condom. And that was the last we saw of Samoa Joe on WWE television before they fired him. Triple H saw this, and he was smart enough to realize that Joe can still be a valuable asset, if not in the ring, then outside of it. And he snatched him right back up for NXT. Triple H saw this, and I mean, it's like you think of the Roadrunner cartoon where he leaves a plume of smoke as he speeds off somewhere. That was Triple H speeding off to the phone to make a call to Samoa Joe to say, hey, let's talk. And it was too bad that he convinced him to come back, because we could have had a year in which CM Punk, Bryan Danielson, and Samoa Joe all ended up in the same place together. But a few months later, there he was back on television standing side by side with, of all people, with William Regal. He was Regal's muscle. And then he ended up back in the ring for that feud with Karrion Kross. TakeOver 36, Samoa Joe wins the NXT Championship from Karrion Kross. TakeOver 36, a show that was headlined by Joe against Kross and Adam Cole against Kyle O'Reilly. That was only 5 months ago. Let that sink in. It feels like a lifetime ago. Now, it has to be said, Joe did not look good in that match. He looked slow. He looked gassed out. This is not the Samoa Joe of Ring of Honor. This is not the Samoa Joe of TNA. This is not even the Samoa Joe of NXT when he first came in. Or the one that went to war with Brock Lesnar. But it was also his first match in a year and a half. So you cut him a little bit of slack for that. We don't know what kind of Samoa Joe we're going to get if he climbs back into the ring on a regular basis somewhere. One thing Joe does still have better than anybody else in the business is the ability to talk. And talk in a very believable way, to talk with authority in his voice. Whether that is as a wrestler, a manager, an authority figure, or an announcer. If you don't believe that Samoa Joe has any value to a major promotion in 2022, then your opinion is not worth shit. You are not somebody to be taken seriously. Once the decision was made to blow up NXT and turn it into the Nickelodeon show, all of a sudden Joe had to vacate the title. Now, we still don't know what the supposed medical issue was that, you know, necessitated him having to forfeit the championship. He never defended it once. I know some people are not convinced there was a medical issue. They just wanted the belt off of him. The reason that I don't necessarily subscribe to that, if they wanted the belt off of him, it would have been very easy for him to drop it on TV in that four-way match that they did, you know, right at the beginning of the 2.0 era. Instead, they put it on a different black and gold name in Tommaso Ciampa. It's not even like they transitioned it over to one of the new guys, you know, Von Geek, on night one. They put the title on Tommaso Ciampa, who comes from the same era that Samoa Joe, the same era of NXT that he comes from. They could have just kept it on Joe and had him be the one to drop it to Bron Breakker. So I'm not ready to sit here and say they made it all up just to get the belt off of him, because they could have gotten it off of him without pulling him from the match. But regardless, he was never seen or heard from again after that. Instead, they've had him in a scouting role, talent development, that type of thing behind the scenes. And now he is unemployed once again. Not for very long. Samoa Joe is going to be signed somewhere within the next 60 days. You can bet your bottom dollar on that. There is not a doubt in my mind about that, that inside of 60 days, assuming he's got the 30-day non-compete like most NXT people do, he will be signed somewhere. Where that is remains to be seen. You can come up with your own theories about where he'll end up. All I will say is that he will end up somewhere, and wherever that is, be it in the ring or out of the ring, he will bring value to that company. But Regal and Joe were not the only names let go. Road Dogg was fired. His brother, Scott Armstrong, also gone. Danny Burch and Timothy Thatcher, who had recently taken on more of a coaching role behind the scenes. Yeah, I'd been wondering what the hell happened to Thatcher. He just sort of up and vanished one day. I just hope that doesn't mean we've seen the last of those fight pit matches in NXT, because I thought that was a great stipulation. Hideki Suzuki was let go. He was the Japanese member of Diamond Mine who just stood there. He never spoke. He never wrestled. I believe he may have been a trainer as well, but as far as an on-screen personality, it's no great loss because he didn't do anything. He just stood there. Gabe Sapolsky, who Triple H brought in after they bought out Evolve, and even before that, Gabe was working behind the scenes for a while with NXT. He was working around Triple H and Shawn Michaels and those people. Kathy Carino, Steve Carino's sister. Steve, as far as we know, for now, he still works there. She no longer does. Kathy was the former Allison Danger back in the day. For those of you who remember, you know, the Ring of Honor days with Allison Danger and Daisy Hayes and people like that. Chris Guy, better known as Ace Steel, he was released. Dave Kapoor, who wore many hats for WWE over the years as a writer and a producer and an on-air talent. He used to manage the Great Khali. George Carroll, who apparently has worked behind the scenes in the past for Ring of Honor, MLW, New Japan, he was let go. And Ryan Katz, who worked as a creative producer for NXT. WWE issued a statement saying, "With the continued evolution of NXT 2.0, we have decided to part ways with some of the staff based in our performance center. We thank them for their many contributions throughout the years, and wish them the best." If there is a lesson to be learned here, it is that if you work for a big company, and this is not something that is exclusive to WWE, if you work for a big company, no matter how long you've worked there for, over 20 years in the case of someone like Regal, loyalty is a one-way street. Never be too loyal to any company, especially a publicly traded one. Because when push comes to shove, they will not be loyal to you. And actually, in Regal's case, Regal is better than most because Regal had 21 years that he worked in this company. And by his own admission, they saved his life back in 1999 when he was all drugged up and was in a very bad way. And he went to rehab and everything. So Regal, at 20-plus years, has had a charmed career longer than a lot of other people who have come into this company. There's a great deal of turnover, especially when it comes to people working behind the scenes in this company, people on the creative end. A lot of them do not last very long. They don't have the kind of run that somebody like Regal had. So he had it better than most. But always remember, when push comes to shove, they will not be loyal to you. What do most of those people that I mentioned have in common? Actually, I think all but Allison Danger were Triple H hires. And in the case of Regal, a very close friend and confidant of Triple H's, as was Road Dogg. You know, there's been an outpouring from so many WWE stars this week with their own stories about how, you know, people like Regal helped them either get their foot in the door there or the ways in which he helped them during their time there. You know, if not for William Regal, there would be no Sasha Banks. She was the first person he went to bat for. He put his own job on the line to get her hired and said, look, if it doesn't work out, you can fire me. It's kind of like what Jim Ross did with Mick Foley when he finally convinced Vince McMahon to bring him in. He didn't want to have anything to do with him. And Vince said, well, it's on you. If it doesn't work out, it's your ass. Sometimes when you believe in somebody so strongly, you know, you put your own neck out there. And that's what Regal did for Sasha. Sasha Banks just headlined a WrestleMania last year. Kevin Owens, who just wrestled for the WWE Championship last weekend, said he wouldn't be where he is today were it not for Regal's advice and guidance when he first came into NXT. Regal was doing talent scouting for the company. He was a frequent visitor at a lot of independent events scouting talent. And that may have also made him expendable with them shying away from indie talent like they were bringing them in before. But his removal is also likely going to have a big effect on talents from the UK scene because he was so plugged into that world. But I'll tell you what, I'm surprised that NXT UK has survived all of these cuts so far. If I worked there, I would be concerned going into this new year. They've gotten through this unscathed so far. I don't know how much longer that's going to last for. But the Allison Danger thing is especially awful. If you read the Twitter thread that Lenny Leonard posted, you know, he's very good friends with her. He said that she packed her entire life into a truck 3 months ago. She's not like Regal and Road Dogg and these other people who have been there for 10, 15, 20 years. You know, 90 days ago, she packed her entire life into a truck to move from Vegas to Florida after WWE offered her the job. She uprooted her entire family. 3 months go by, all is seemingly going well, you know, performance-wise. They even asked her to go in and help us out. We're shorthanded, and she got exposed to COVID, so she had a quarantine over Christmas. You know, now her child now is starting their first day at their new school. She picks them up later that day, and she gets a phone call telling her, you're fired. 3 months after moving across the country for her dream job, you're fired. It's disgusting. And, you know, you'll have people go, well, that's just business, and WWE doesn't do anything differently than these other companies. You hear a story like that. I don't want to hear the excuses. I don't want to hear the excuses. I don't want to hear the bootlicking. You can objectively look at a story and an example like that and admit it's fucking disgusting. It's okay to admit that, even if you're a big WWE fan. It is fucking disgusting. Now, I'm not going to sit here and feel too sorry for Triple H. I see a lot of people, I feel so badly for Triple H. Poor Triple H. Poor Triple H. Let us not forget the countless stories of him as a talent wielding his golden shovel. And all of the political stuff, everything. It is a ruthless business. He is a product of that business. It is a business full of egos and insecure people. And right now, he's getting a taste of just how ruthless it can be. But at the end of the day, he's still married into the McMahon family. He's a millionaire many times over. Life could always be worse. The man had heart problems. He's lucky to be alive. This is not about feeling sorry for Triple H. I feel bad for all the people who bought into and believed in the vision that he had for NXT and for what he created. For everybody who felt like they were part of something special, only to watch it get bulldozed so they could build a bunch of condos on top of it. And whatever politics he may have played during his career, there are a lot of talents that have come through NXT that have praised Triple H for the, you know, creative freedom they felt that they had, like Hit Row, before they got sent to Death Row on SmackDown. B-Fab just did an interview with K&S WrestleFest talking about how Triple H gave them the freedom to really be themselves and to come up with their own ideas to make the group work, how much of a collaborative effort it really was. Karrion Kross and Scarlett, they were just on with Renee Paquette on her podcast, talking about having the dream experience in NXT, where their ideas were embraced, and again, they used the word collaboration. Their ideas were met with enthusiasm, and the ones that weren't, Triple H and his team would take it and try to make it better. You know, but the cool entrance and everything, they had a vision for those two. And then when they were sent up, or down, depending on how you look at it, you know, there was no explanation given for any of the changes, like the mask. It felt like discount Karrion Kross and Scarlett from what they were doing in NXT. So he deserves a lot of credit for that. But I've been saying this for a while now, and there can be no doubt anymore. There is a very clear agenda to dismantle what Triple H built, and to remove a lot of his friends and his most trusted advisors, the ones that would be loyal to him. Shawn Michaels and Terry Taylor and Steve Corino, they still have their jobs for now, right? You got to have somebody down there to run things. Can't just get rid of everybody. I don't know what their future holds. They're still there for the time being. But this is the sort of thing that you see when one administration leaves and gets replaced by another. You clean house, you bring in your own people. That's what this is. Triple H, if he's ever ready to come back, is not going to have anything left to come back to. This goes beyond a simple change in philosophy. We're going to get more youthful. We're going to go younger. They could have done that without tearing it all down and getting rid of everybody. Nobody's saying you shouldn't try to go younger, that you shouldn't try, you know, to recruit some college athletes and stuff. I mean, people like Jerry Briscoe and Jim Ross were doing that 20 years ago, 25 years ago. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. You can bring people in from different places and other, you know, different sports, and you can get more youthful if you want to without having to blow everything up. This is about more than just business and saving money on some contracts. You're going to hear that, oh, NXT was a money loser and they haven't run any house shows since the start of the pandemic, so they're not bringing in any money. As if their house shows in front of 200 people were making them profitable all those years. What these people don't mention is the fact that NXT got them an extra 2 hours of primetime television on USA Network. And they've never said publicly how much money they're making off those 2 hours every week, but they're making money. We know that. They're making some money off it. I wish they didn't. I think going 2 hours on USA is what started the downfall of that brand. So you're going to hear a lot of dumb excuses from a lot of dumb people that, oh, it's all just business. This is all just conspiracy talk. It's all just business. It's not all just business. This is more than that. This feels personal. Ever since Triple H landed in the hospital, look at what has happened. You know, the word coup was thrown around this week a lot in the news media after what happened at the Capitol last year. It feels like an appropriate word to use here. It looks and feels like a goddamn coup. To oust him from power and erase everything that might remind people about him. A few years ago, it would have been unimaginable to think that we would be where we are today. That Triple H would end up on Vince McMahon's shit list the way that he has. He looked to be the heir apparent whenever Vince died face down on the desk at the gorilla position with his headset on during some random 24/7 title segment on Raw. Triple H would be the man to step in and take over creatively, running the show. He's been sitting in on production meetings since 1997. He married into the family. He's one of the most decorated stars they've ever had. A future Hall of Famer. Basically running their developmental system. And yet here we are, and the idea of Triple H now being the one to ascend to the throne is laughable. They've completely castrated this man. There's a better chance that we end up with two men with the last name Khan running the two biggest promotions in this country. So why then? Why is this happening? How did he fall out of favor so quickly? I can remember Dave Meltzer and others years ago talking about how the moment Triple H gets power, people like Kevin Dunn are as good as gone, and they know it. Because those are Vince's people. Triple H has no use for Vince's yes men. Kevin Dunn probably would have been the first person into the wood chipper. Well, he'd probably like it in there. But you think Bruce Pritchard would last a month before Triple H got rid of his ass? I mean, give me a break. I wouldn't be surprised if any or all of them had Vince's ear on the moves that we've seen lately, especially Dunn. Dunn has a lot of influence in that company. He's a big power broker. He'd been there a long time. It's all about self-preservation with these people. It's in their best interest to see Triple H fail. I told you all, when NXT failed to stop AEW from growing on Wednesday nights and they got their clock cleaned in the ratings, that was the beginning of the end for Triple H. That was the moment that any chance of him taking over died, once and for all. I am sure that Vince McMahon lost respect for him for that. He had one job, hurt AEW, and he failed. Remember, it's never Vince McMahon's fault. There always has to be a scapegoat. They hired Paul Heyman and Eric Bischoff as the executive directors for Raw and SmackDown. Bischoff lasted 4 months. Heyman lasted a year, so he lasted a little bit longer. I'm sure he doesn't lie awake at night worrying about AEW, but he absolutely considers them competition. I don't care what they say publicly. To him, they're a pest. That head-to-head hurt NXT far more than it did AEW. You know, when Scotty Too Hotty asked for his NXT release a few months ago, I told you then when it happened. I said it was very telling. Him saying that the black and gold brand was something special. And that he always promised himself he would never be part of something just for the paycheck. So he quit. Like someone who could see the writing on the wall and knew that it was time to quit before he was fired. Because I guarantee you, if he didn't quit when he did, his name probably would have been on that list this week. He did an interview recently with Chris Van Vliet, and he said they're hiring all these college athletes now, but you can't teach passion. You need passion to do this, and he thinks that at some point, things are going to swing back the other way, and they're going to want people who are a little bit older, who are more experienced, because in his view, putting green on green on live television can be very dangerous. Green on green is dangerous. Like the blind leading the blind. One of the reasons New Year's Evil was such a good show is because the best matches all involve people with experience. Carmelo Hayes beat Roderick Strong to unify the North American and Cruiserweight titles. Matt Riddle and MSK beat Walter and Imperium. I thought that was the match of the night. Walter, by the way, is officially moving full-time to NXT 2.0. He's moving to the States. And he is moving from NXT UK to NXT 2.0 to join the other members of Imperium. So for the time being, he gets a main roster stay of execution. And Tommaso Ciampa did the honors for Bron Breakker, which I thought was the right move in this case. You know, whatever you think about the new NXT over the old one, Bron Breakker is a future main eventer. They've got something special in him. Him and Carmelo Hayes both. But when we look back on this first week of 2022, we're not going to be talking about the arrival of Bron Breakker as the NXT champion. We're going to look back on it as the week that the carcass of the black and gold was lowered into the ground and Vince McMahon shoveled the dirt on top of it once and for all. But this fall from grace for Triple H has been swift, and it's going to be very interesting to see where he ends up 6 months from now, a year from now. I know some people think, oh, he's going to be released or he's going to quit. He'll quit before he gets released. I don't think we're going to wake up one morning and hear that Paul Levesque has been released. We wish him well in his future endeavors. I think him marrying into the family probably saved him from that. But he may pull a Shane McMahon at some point. If he gets sick and tired of this, he may pull a Shane and do what Shane did all those years ago and say, you know what? I don't need this shit. And I never imagined that I would be sitting here talking about that as even a remote possibility. But here we are. I did a rare Monday Night Raw stream with my full review of the show this week because I wanted to do a quick pilot right after for our new call-in show for YouTube members. So I'm not going to get into the entire show here, but there was a lot of stuff that went down this week Raw on Monday was all about setting up the first ever singles match for the Royal Rumble between Brock Lesnar and Bobby Lashley. It is crazy to think that Lesnar is WWE champion 20 years after winning it for the very first time. Paul Heyman is just suddenly back with Brock. He came out, he introduced Lesnar, and Brock thanked him for getting him that sweet free agent status and for pulling the strings necessary to get him into the day one main event after his match with Roman Reigns fell through because Roman was at home dealing with COVID. You know, they did the fatal four-way on Raw that they were supposed to do at day one with Lashley, Kevin Owens, Seth Rollins, and Big E to determine who would challenge Lesnar for the championship. And Bobby Lashley got the victory. So now the stage is set for a first-time ever match. We don't get too many of those in WWE. I'm hyped for it. I am hyped for the segments with Paul Heyman and MVP over these next few weeks. This is a match I've been waiting a very long time for. Roman Reigns was back on SmackDown on Friday night. So he missed the pay-per-view, but he wasn't gone for very long. Face-to-face with Brock Lesnar, who pitched a winner-take-all match, teasing a possible unification. He never actually used the word unification. Teasing the idea, maybe, of doing a unification. All he said was, why don't we do you and me, you know, champion against champion, title for title. That doesn't necessarily mean unification. But of course, that's what a lot of people are going to think when you pitch a stipulation like that. Roman rejected the idea, and what followed was Heyman acting like a jilted lover and talking about how much he loved his tribal chief and how he was hurt by what he did to him. Lesnar told Heyman to shut up a few times. Roman told Brock not to talk to him like that. He dropped him with a Superman punch and left. This is the weirdest love triangle that I have ever seen. I was half expecting Brock to tell Roman he was mine before he was yours. Now, for those hoping for one, there will be no unification. I still say that Roman Reigns and or Heyman get involved in the WWE title match at the Royal Rumble. And in the case of Heyman, if he's involved, I mean, he'll be there, obviously, if he's in Brock's corner. But if he gets involved in a way that costs Lesnar the match, that doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to reveal that it was all a ruse. I still feel like that's where this is ultimately going to be headed. But it doesn't have to go down that way. It could be kind of an accidental on-purpose type of thing or some distraction that was unintended that cost Lesnar the championship, and we find out later on that, you know, Heyman was with the bloodline all along. Whatever way it goes down, that costs Lesnar the championship. Lashley gets the WWE title back. Brock then enters himself into the Royal Rumble match later that night. And how that happens, you can come up with any number of ways to get him in that match. You know, Brock's got his Canadian buddy, Sami Zayn. I'm sure he could be convinced to give up his spot to Brock Lesnar if need be. But Brock wins, and that is how we get Roman Reigns against Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. And I know some people are tired of it. I know a lot of people are tired of it. WrestleMania 31, which was a great match, by the way. WrestleMania 31, WrestleMania 34, not so great. Countless other shows, Saudi Arabia shows, and now here we are again. Likely going to get it again at WrestleMania 38. But there really is no bigger match that WWE can do in these next 3 months than Brock Lesnar against Roman Reigns. And if you think that's sad, you're not wrong. But I'm only spitting facts here. You know that. It is the biggest possible WrestleMania match that they could do, especially given how much they promoted it for day one and they didn't deliver. And to the people annoyed that Brock might win, why don't they give it to a younger guy? We're talking about the Rumble now. Oh, Brock's going to win the Rumble. I hate that, blah, blah, blah. Why don't they give it to a younger guy or somebody newer? If you look at the history of Royal Rumble matches, recent history at least, but I think even overall history, or at least since the days that this became a thing where the winner goes to the main event of WrestleMania, it wasn't like that in the early years. But if you look at that, if you look at that history, they rarely give it to somebody new. You will find some examples of that, but it's not this frequent occurrence like I think some people have it in their heads that it used to be. People have this false narrative that the Royal Rumble is some kind of vehicle to launch new stars, like it's the King of the Ring or something. The King of the Ring has more of a history for that. You look at the King of the Ring, the years when Mabel won, Steve Austin, Ken Shamrock, Billy Gunn, Edge. The King of the Ring is more of a vehicle to attempt to launch a new name than the Royal Rumble ever was. Now, it could be. You could make the Royal Rumble that if you want it to be. But it's not. People have this false impression of what the Royal Rumble is. That's not what it is. They have rarely used it for that purpose. The winner of the Royal Rumble headlines WrestleMania. And they headline WrestleMania with big names. Right or wrong, that's what the Royal Rumble is. Look at some of the names that have won the Rumble in recent years. Edge won it last year, a Hall of Famer who already won it 11 years earlier. Drew McIntyre won it in 2020. That's a rare example of using it to elevate a new star. Seth Rollins won it in 2019, already established, former world champion. Randy Orton, Triple H, Batista, John Cena, Sheamus and Del Dipshit, they won it back-to-back in 2011 and 2012, and both curtain-jerked WrestleMania that year. The winner of the Royal Rumble should never be in the opening match of WrestleMania. The winner of the Royal Rumble should never be in the middle of the card. And if they don't think that they're big enough names to headline, then they never should have won the Royal Rumble in the first place. You know, again, every now and then there are exceptions. Like if you have a major attraction, they had Rock and Cena that first time in Miami. That was a huge match. Did more business than any other WrestleMania match they've ever done. That match has to go on last. But, you know, that's it. Otherwise, this should never happen. So Brock Lesnar winning the Royal Rumble is exactly the sort of thing I would expect WWE to do. And in this case, it fits the story they're trying to tell for WrestleMania. If Brock Lesnar is main eventing WrestleMania against Roman Reigns, then Brock Lesnar should win the Royal Rumble. That is, of course, assuming that he is going to lose the WWE Championship and things play out the way that I just, pitched it to. Brock Lesnar then should win the Royal Rumble. And by the way, if Lesnar retained against Lashley and Roman Reigns lost his championship at the Rumble, then Roman Reigns should find his way into the Rumble match and he should win it. It's the same concept. Now, at the end of SmackDown, we were supposed to find out who Adam Pearce selected to challenge Roman for the Universal title at the Royal Rumble. He said the powers that be, they want Roman to defend his title at the Rumble, and I have until the end of the night to make an announcement about who I want that person to be. Seth Rollins walked into Roman's dressing room from Monday Night Raw. Seth Rollins randomly shows up on SmackDown, brand split be damned. They never made it official that he's the challenger. He only laughed in Roman's face as they went off the air. The WWE on Fox Twitter account posted a graphic hyping the match and then quickly deleted it, only to replace it with another tweet admitting that, well, we may have jumped the gun on the match announcement, but we hope that Adam Pearce makes it official. So it sounds like some poor social media person got reamed for posting that tweet when they weren't supposed to. So it may or may not end up being Seth Rollins challenging Roman Reigns. I thought it was weird to go heel against heel like that, but it's a match they teased when Rollins was still on SmackDown. They never did it. I think it would be a great match. In the ring, I think it would be great. I was thinking that it would end up being Big E. I thought Big E was going to show up on Friday. I thought he was going to help the New Day beat the Usos in their street fight to win the SmackDown Tag Team titles. And then he was going to say that I'm challenging Roman, right? They already took some gold from the Bloodline. And now Big E is going to take the Universal title from Roman Reigns at the Royal Rumble. He lost his WWE title to someone who wasn't even originally supposed to be in the match. So he's got a reason to be upset. Now, maybe it still happens that way. Big E could still challenge Roman Reigns at the Royal Rumble for the championship. Maybe it's not a done deal yet. Maybe Rollins has to first wrestle Big E and Kevin Owens on Raw for the shot, right? All losers, by the way. They lost at day one. They lost in the Fatal 4-Way on Monday. And it's the same thing that they're doing with the women, with trying to figure out who's going to challenge Becky Lynch. It's all the losers. It's like a consolation prize. Everyone's a loser in this company. I hope it's not Big E. I hope I'm actually wrong on that, just because if it is him, he's not winning. He's not beating Roman Reigns. And to lose back-to-back like that to Lesnar and to Reigns, you know, he already lost to Roman at Survivor Series. I don't really think it does Big E any favors. But until they make it official, we have to assume it's going to be Seth Rollins. Now on Raw, one other thing from Raw that I wanted to mention here. We got the match between AJ Styles and Omos. That was originally scheduled for 1 week earlier. Omos went home. We don't know why. Maybe it was COVID-related, but he was back. So we got the match on Monday. It was the worst match I've ever seen AJ Styles involved in. I saw a lot of his matches in TNA. I've seen all of his matches in WWE. Some are better than others. A lot of them are great. This was the worst AJ Styles match I have ever seen. I understand that they're trying to get the big guy over, but it is insulting to have to listen to the announcers, and they're only doing their job, but to have your announcers put this guy over using words like nimble. Corey Graves called Omos nimble. Jimmy Smith called him one of the most athletic giants that they have ever seen. This is after Undertaker was on the bump and made that comment that Omos is the closest thing they have to Andre the Giant. It is insulting. He's tall. That's it. He sucks. He's been on television for a long time now. You know, he first won those tag team titles with AJ a long time ago. He's not new anymore. He's tall. They shoot, you know, when they shoot him walking down to the ring, they put the camera on the floor to make him look even taller. Right? He's a big, intimidating looking guy. He'll be good for one pay-per-view match against whoever the babyface champion is. They'll get to be the underdog that slays the giant, and that's going to be it. If they are preparing this guy for anything more than that in the near future, he ain't ready to be in that spot. Now on SmackDown, they had Charlotte Flair in the ring to announce the lineup so far for the Women's Royal Rumble match, and as you would expect, they are relying on names from the past because they don't have enough women on the main roster right now to do a 30-person match. Some NXT names, I guarantee you, are going to be added. They usually do that, but they may have to rely on more NXT names than usual. They haven't announced any just yet. The biggest blow came yesterday when WWE announced that Sasha Banks is going to be out 6 to 8 weeks after she suffered a foot injury at a live event in North Carolina. She had an MRI done, nothing is broken, but she has a bruised bone and she is at home undergoing physical therapy. That takes her out of the Royal Rumble. And she was my early pick to win. The good news is that she'll be back well before WrestleMania. But so far in the Women's Rumble, we've got Rhea Ripley, Nikki Cross, Nikki and Brie, the Bella Twins, Shotzi Blackheart, Natalya, Michelle McCool, Dana Brooke, Carmella, Queen Zelina, Tamina, Kelly Kelly, boy, what a lineup this is, Aaliyah, Summer Rae, who said that it was supposed to be a surprise, but I guess they changed their minds, Naomi, Shayna Baszler, Lita, and the returning Mickie James, the reigning Impact Knockouts champion, Mickie James. That came out of nowhere. WWE getting in on some of that Forbidden Door action. They even had Pat McAfee acknowledge her on commentary as the Impact Knockouts champion. I don't think WWE is suddenly changing its business philosophy. I think they realized they needed names. They made this mess, and now they have to figure out a way out of it. I don't know if Mickie even has a contract with Impact, or if her contract is actually with the NWA, because she works for both. But they acknowledged her on TV and on Twitter as the Impact Knockouts champion. She has been the champion since October. She just retained in a Texas death match against Deonna Purrazzo last night at the Impact Hard to Kill pay-per-view. You know, we've got Deonna coming in on Friday, in fact, for the House of Glory women's tournament. But Mickie James was fired less than a year ago. And she made that big stink on social media about WWE shipping her belongings back to her in a hefty bag. Triple H, you know, that guy that used to work there, he tweeted later that they were appalled by what happened and they fired the person responsible, that being Mark Carano. Even forgetting Garbage Gate, put that on the side, they fired her. She was one of many, many, many people they fired last year. And she is right back less than a year later. They all come back. For all the ones that go out and they do the interviews and they do the podcast talking about how, you know, they're treated or, you know, all the different issues or their ideas were rejected, they all come back. Now, if you needed any more proof that they're running on fumes in terms of these names, Charlotte, the SmackDown Women's Champion, announced that she will be in the Royal Rumble match. And when she wins, she's going to choose her own opponent for WrestleMania. Now, it was fun when Brock was the champion and he was in the Rumble a couple of years ago. The way they worked that was perfect. I loved that. It was one of my favorite Rumbles they've done in the last few years. Gave us that great moment where McIntyre Claymore kicked Brock out of the ring. There are ways to do this and set up a new challenger for WrestleMania. But this is what the Rumble card looks like as of this morning. We have Brock Lesnar against Bobby Lashley. We have Roman Reigns defending the Universal title, possibly against Seth Rollins. Becky Lynch defends her Raw Women's Championship against the winner of the Triple Threat match in Philly tomorrow night between Liv Morgan, who's already lost twice to Becky, Doudrop, who lost three straight matches on TV to Bianca Belair, and Bianca, who should win, but then they give the match away at the Rumble. They should be waiting until WrestleMania to do that. So I have a feeling Bianca and Doudrop are going to cancel each other out, and we're getting a third match between Becky and Liv. We've got Edge and Beth Phoenix against The Miz and Maryse, and the two Rumble matches. That should be the complete card. I mean, maybe they add a tag team match on the kickoff, but I don't think they're going to have room to add much more than that, you know, with the two Rumble matches on there. So that is the lineup as of today. Now, a quick word of warning for anybody who browses in incognito mode in Google Chrome. I use Chrome. It is my preferred browser. If you ever use incognito mode, and I won't even ask what you would be using it for, be aware, it is not as incognito as you may think. Google has made a lot of money tracking people's movements online. There's even a $5 billion class action lawsuit against them in California for secretly collecting user data. Even Google admits incognito does not mean invisible. You don't browse incognito if you want to be as invisible as possible. You use ExpressVPN, like I do. One thing you don't want data brokers getting a hold of is your IP address. They can use that to identify you and your location. But with ExpressVPN, your connection gets rerouted through an encrypted server and your IP address is masked. Just like me, whenever I go to a supermarket or the laundromat these days, I have to be masked. Even if you don't mask up, trust me, you want your IP address to mask up. Every time you connect to ExpressVPN, you get a random IP address shared by other ExpressVPN users, which makes it a lot harder for third parties to identify you or steal your data. And best of all, ExpressVPN is super easy to use. It doesn't matter what device you're using. You could be on your laptop or you could be on your smartphone. All you have to do is tap one button and you are instantly protected. One of the reasons I love using it, it's not a pain in the ass. Anybody can push a button. So if you really want to go incognito and protect your privacy, secure yourself with the number one rated VPN. Visit expressvpn.com/solomonster and get 3 extra months for free. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster. Go to expressvpn.com/solomonster to learn more. Some AEW news and notes. Hangman Adam Page retained his AEW world title and handed Bryan Danielson his first loss in an AEW ring on Wednesday. First Dynamite on TBS. They were back over 1 million viewers. Only the second time since my birthday that they've done that. Paul White, Mark Henry, and Jerry Lynn were the judges for the match in case it went to another time limit draw, which it was not going to. They went half the time this time, and I thought it was even better than their Winter is Coming match. Both men bled. Danielson did everything he could to try to take that buckshot lariat away from Page. But in the end, he fell victim to it, got turned inside out. He put Page and his finish over in the strongest possible way. He gave him the two best matches of his life. I would love to see Bryan continue as a heel and work a program with Darby Allin. But it looks like Darby and Andrade is going to be next, based off the promo he cut on Rampage talking about Stink and his little buddy. That's what he called him. The man called Stink. Jade Cargill beat Ruby Soho to become the first ever TBS Women's Champion. They did not have a very good match. It certainly did not feel like the finals of a big tournament. But she is the one they have big plans for, and so the hope here is that the title will make her and not the other way around. Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus, they are the new AEW Tag Team Champions. They beat the Lucha Brothers in a match that saw one of the most gruesome wrestling injuries that I have ever seen. Luchasaurus chokeslam Rey Fénix off the apron through a table on the floor. Which, you know, for these guys, sounds like a pretty routine bump, right? Just another day at the office. Fénix, though, put his left arm out. He extended his left arm to brace his fall. And when he did, his arm got trapped underneath him. And it looked like his arm snapped in half when he landed on it. He immediately grabbed the arm. He started screaming. The finish with Jungle Boy pinning Penta went off as planned. But I guess they were supposed to go a little bit longer than they did. The title change was planned, though. Miraculously, Fénix only suffered a dislocated elbow, a badly dislocated elbow, but a dislocated elbow and not a broken arm. This guy, I said on Wednesday, if he gets out of this without a broken arm, this guy must be fucking Gumby. Not that he's, you know, fucking Gumby, like having sex with him, but he must be like Gumby. He must be made of rubber. How he managed to avoid a fracture with the way he landed on it is beyond me. The human body sometimes is an amazing thing. An amazingly resilient vessel is the, I sound like Matt Hardy now, is the human body. He said that he's got more tests to undergo before they can fully diagnose the extent of the injury and give him a timetable for when he might be able to come back. But no bones were broken. All things considered, I think he's the luckiest man alive this week. But that was disgusting. You know, in the moment when you watch it, you don't know what the diagnosis is going to be. You just watch the injury happen and play out in real time. And it is one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen. And it reminded me of the Sid Vicious injury in WCW, where his foot, his boot, was just dangling. And that's still the worst I've ever seen. We'll see if the news gets any worse, because sometimes, you know, x-rays don't pick up on everything, and they could miss smaller fractures, there could be ligament damage. So, I mean, there was somebody who posted something on one of the Lucha sites saying he could be back in a matter of weeks. I would be stunned if he was back in weeks. I think that's being a little optimistic. It'll probably be a while before we see him back in the ring again, but he really dodged a bullet, because that looked bad. Fénix was not the only injury coming out of the Newark show on Wednesday. Jake Atlas, who just signed a contract with AEW, blew out his knee working a match with Adam Cole at the Rampage taping that aired on Friday night. He came off the ropes with a springboard. He got caught with a super kick on the way down. And when he landed, his knee just buckled. And he finished the match. He couldn't go over for the Panama Sunrise, so Cole just slapped on a very weak-looking knee bar for the submission. Atlas on Twitter said his knee is going to be fine. We'll see him back soon. I don't know if he's gotten that MRI yet, but he was due for one. And at that point, we'll know how long he'll be out for. But he seems optimistic it won't be for that long. It's a shame because the match with Cole was very good. It was better than any match I ever saw him have in NXT. You know, there's never a good time to go down with an injury, but this was the worst possible time for this to happen. Well, I mean, actually, he already signed the contract, right? He's getting paid, so I guess it would have been worse if this was a tryout and he had not yet signed his contract. That would have been worse. But hopefully he gets well soon. I thought that the match was very good. And if you are an AEW fan living in the UK, starting this week, Rampage is now airing on ITV and ITV4. Before, you can only watch it through Fight TV, although I think you got it on their commercial-free. I don't know if it'll be ad-free or not on ITV, but it will air weekly on Tuesdays at 11.05 p.m. on ITV4, and will then replay Thursday nights on ITV. Last night was AEW's Battle of the Belts special, which was basically Saturday Night Rampage. Cody Rhodes announced on his Instagram that he and Brandy are isolating at home with family who have tested positive for COVID. So with the TNT Championship on ice, because the TNT Champion is in quarantine, they had to bump the match from the show with Cody and Sammy Guevara. Tony Khan made a match between Dustin Rhodes and Sammy Guevara to crown an interim TNT Champion, which seems very silly if Cody is only going to be gone for a week or two to crown an interim champion, although they could always create, you know, some new storyline twist with there being two champions now. It's still silly to me, though. If he's going to be gone for a very short period of time, I don't know that you needed an interim champion. But the show is called Battle of the Belts, and they needed another title match. So this is what we ended up with. The two of them had a really good match. No surprise there. There were moments during the match where Dustin was slowing down there, showing his age. But he's 52 years old out there doing some fantastic work. I mean, he and Ricky Morton are out there in their 50s and 60s busting out Canadian destroyers. Sammy needed this win coming off the Cody loss. Dustin gave Sammy a destroyer off the apron through a table. And that was not the finish. I hate that. They do it all the time, but I hate that. Sammy came back, won the title after trading a series of roll-ups. Sammy got one that stuck, got the pin, and he is now the interim TNT champion. Very good stuff here. Daniel Garcia was sitting in the crowd watching this match. When the match was over, he got into the ring. He got right up in Sammy's face. The two of them had to be pulled apart. They were brawling and rolling around. And so Wednesday on Dynamite, it will be Sammy defending his interim title against Daniel Garcia. Ricky Starks retained his FTW title against Matt Sydal. Good match, not as good as the opener. It's just nice to see Ricky Starks back on television. We haven't seen him in the ring very much on Dynamite or Rampage since he came back from the neck injury, and that was months ago. After the match, Starks was still attacking Sydal. Lee Moriarty ran out for the save. Dante Martin ran out, and he started a little brawl with Powerhouse Hobbs, knocked him out of the ring, and the two of them are going to have a match on Wednesday. Britt Baker, in the main event, retained her AEW Women's Championship over Riho. She finally got that elusive victory over Riho, and with the lockjaw, no less, she got the submission win. I thought it started out okay. It picked up nicely in the final few minutes. There were some convincing near falls there at the end. You know, they gave them time to. This was probably somewhere between 10 and 15 minutes. It's very obvious. Jamie Hayter is on her way out of this little group with her and Rebel and Baker. More tension teased between the two of them here. I think the split happens in the next few weeks and the match for Revolution in March, is Britt Baker defending the title against Jamie Hayter. But I don't think we're getting a title change in that match. So Battle of the Belts, it was a fine episode of Rampage. That's really all that it was. I thought these quarterly specials that Tony Khan told us about would feel more special. This one sort of snuck up on us. Not a lot of hype, not a lot of thought seemed to really be put into it. So if you were expecting a Clash of the Champions type special or Saturday Night's Main Event type of deal, this was underwhelming. It was good, but it was underwhelming for what I was expecting it to be. Wrestle Kingdom 16. This is always a fun time of year, and I always look forward to watching Wrestle Kingdom, and I don't get to watch as much New Japan during the course of the year. I always make it a point to watch as much of the G1 as I can. I end up not seeing every match, but I watch as much of the G1 as I can. There's certain big shows like Dominion, where they'll have a big main event at Wrestling Dontaku in May. Wrestle Kingdom is one I always make time for, and I always enjoy. And this year was no different. It was just a different vibe. Not as fun because of the circumstances of the way things are right now. New Japan announced its return to Access TV with encore episodes from its earlier run on Access starting January 20th at 10 p.m. Eastern after Impact Wrestling. They're going to be airing the Chris Jericho-Kenny Omega match from Wrestle Kingdom 12 on that date. All new episodes will begin airing weekly on March 3rd. You know, new episodes doesn't mean recent shows, I don't think. I think it's still going to be a collection of big matches from the last few years. So they crawled back in bed with Access after Access canceled them a few years ago because they didn't want to work with Impact. you know, New Japan did not at the time want to work with Impact. And so Anthem, which owns Impact, dropped the axe and kicked New Japan off Access. And so now they're back. You know, now they're working with Impact anyway. So it only made sense, I guess, between the fact they're working with Impact now, the product is so cold, it's not as if there was a better television deal waiting for them somewhere else or they would have taken it. So at least they're back on a real network now. Kind of a real network. The thing about these shows, all the crowds can do, all that they're allowed to do, is clap. They're not allowed to cheer and boo and make noise. All they can do is clap. It fucking sucks. But at least we got a show at all. You know, let alone one in the Tokyo Dome. A mostly empty Tokyo Dome, but the Tokyo Dome all the same. I thought the main event and the Shibata match were the best matches on night one. This was Katsuyori Shibata's first Tokyo Dome match since losing the never open weight title to Hirooki Goto at Wrestle Kingdom 11. That was 5 years ago. Ren Narita was the opponent. We didn't know coming in who the opponent was going to be. I thought maybe Suzuki, maybe. It ended up being Ren Narita. Not a marquee name, but a name that made sense, I guess, given that he came out of the New Japan Dojo where Shibata is the head trainer. He basically looks like Shibata Jr. He's almost like a Shibata clone. Shibata getting on the mic before the match and throwing out the rules. This was supposed to be a grappling match. This was not supposed to be a regular wrestling match. He gets into the ring. He asks for the mic, which is odd, because usually they don't do that in New Japan. Usually they'll ask for the mic after the match. He asks for the microphone, and he says, this is going to be a regular wrestling match with striking allowed. And I thought that was great. And Kevin Kelly on commentary sold it like he was going into business for himself, and he didn't tell anybody, and he was shooting. I know Meltzer and The Observer said that it was a shoot, and he really didn't tell anybody beforehand. I don't believe that. I think whoever told Meltzer that is just working him. I also laughed very hard at the line in The Observer. This was the funniest thing that I saw or heard or read all week long. There was a line in The Observer. He was talking about Shibata, and he mentioned Shibata's injury from 2017, which was not funny, but he mentioned the injury from 2017 and how he had to have his brain removed from his head during surgery. They removed his brain. I love Dave. I know what he meant. Yeah, it's a version of the story that he's told before, and I've told it here on the podcast, that the injury was such that Shibata had to have part of his skull removed to alleviate pressure on the brain. Not that he actually had his fucking brain removed. He would be fucking dead if that happened. It was a typo, but I laughed very hard when I read that. It's like the typo in November when Dave wrote that Kyle O'Reilly also has his death coming up soon. He was talking about Johnny Gargano's contract coming up, and Kyle's contract was also coming up. Instead of saying that, though, he said Kyle has his death coming up. I assume he meant date. Poor Kyle had Meltzer spoiling his own death in The Observer. Dave badly needs sleep. Sleep or an editor, or both. But this was great, and Shibata won with the PK. Edge, you know, was gone for 9 years and came back. Bryan Danielson was gone for 3 years. And he's out there now having some of the best matches of his life. None of them had a life-threatening injury like Shibata did. And he was gone for almost 5 years. I hope he can work his way up to high-profile opponents in a high-profile Tokyo Dome match next year. The Evil and Ishii match for the Never Open Weight title absolutely sucked. Evil won the championship. And it pains me to say that about an Ishii match. I love Ishii. A lot of people love Ishii. I very rarely, if ever, can say that I watch a match of his and think it's the worst anything. This was the worst thing I saw on the entire card. I thought it sucked. Ever since Evil turned heel, his matches are the worst thing about these New Japan shows. Him being part of a group called the House of Torture is very appropriate. I could not think of a more appropriate name. Takes a lot to have a bad match with Ishii. This was even worse because all of the interference and all of the antics and all of the cheating is designed to get heat on a show where the fans are not allowed to cheer or boo. All they can do is clap. So what you end up with is complete silence. This was stupid. We had Hirooki Goto and Yoshihashi beating Zack Sabre Jr. and Tai Chi to win the IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team titles. They had a good match. Kevin Kelly admitted when it was over how thin the tag team division is on the heavyweight side. Can you imagine Michael Cole doing the same thing on SmackDown? Boy, that was a really good match, but, you know, we're really thin on tag teams here on SmackDown. I would appreciate the honesty if they actually let him say something like that. And Kevin Kelly was saying, you know, it's very thin right now in the heavyweight tag team division, and they might have to have singles guys teaming up until the borders, you know, really start opening up again. A little bit of honesty can go a long way. I was surprised to see Hiromu lose to El Desperado, but perhaps he's moving up to the heavyweight division soon, like Will Ospreay did. I thought it was good. They had a good match, but it didn't feel like it rose to the level of some of those big Hiromu matches I've seen him have in the past. And then we had Kazuchika Okada challenging Shingo Takagi for the IWGP Heavyweight title. World Heavyweight title. Big match Okada at the Tokyo Dome. There's nothing better. Even a half-empty Tokyo Dome, there's nothing better. Actually, there's nothing better in all of wrestling than those final few minutes of an Okada match. This was excellent. Not just the final few minutes, but the entire thing. This was excellent. This felt like a Wrestle Kingdom main event. This was a rematch from Dominion last year where Shingo beat Okada to win the vacant title. Okada had to win the G1 to get back to the Tokyo Dome main event. Okada was out with the Antonio Inoki-inspired gear during his entrance. This year, New Japan is celebrating its 50th anniversary of the company that Inoki founded. You know, Inoki has been in very poor health. You could tell from what little interview footage we saw of him on that Dark Side of the Ring episode on the Collision in Korea that he looked very frail. But he has vowed to try his best to be there in March for the 50th anniversary show. After his match on night two, Okada said that he was waiting for Inoki to be there for it and to find the energy to be there in the ring for the anniversary. They're trying to will him. They're trying to will this man back into the ring. Not to wrestle, but, you know, back into the ring to be there. It is funny because he's basically, Inoki has been persona non grata in the company that he founded for years because he, you know, back in, I guess it was the mid-2000s, he kind of booked New Japan into oblivion, and he made a lot of enemies, and so he has not been adored by the people in that company. He has not been honored and acknowledged until now because it's the anniversary and because he looks like he's so close to death. You know, all of a sudden, it's all about Inoki and trying to get him back, and so we'll see if that actually ends up happening. But Okada wins with the Rainmaker in a fantastic match, and we got our first match of the year candidate for 2022. I liked how Okada bowed to the old belt after the match. He's been carrying around that old IWGP belt, the one that he wore many times. That was sort of his trophy for winning the G1. He didn't want to carry the briefcase around. He brought back the old IWGP belt. I wish they would have brought it back, period. But that was not to be. He bowed to the belt and he handed it off. And he accepted the new championship. I am going to miss that belt. It is appropriate that on the 50th anniversary, Okada would be the one holding the IWGP title at a time when New Japan could really use a shot in the arm. You know, I can't say that I blame them for going back to Okada, but I still maintain that Will Ospreay deserved a longer run with that belt, and I hope at some point he gets it. But that leads us into Wrestle Kingdom 16 Night 2. Night 2, I thought, was better than Night 1. We had a tag team match with four of the women from Stardom. I had somebody email me at the end of the year telling me that Stardom was the best promotion in the world in 2021. I know they did very good business. Despite the pandemic, they did very good business last year. I just don't watch it regularly enough to judge one way or the other. I did watch part of the free show they aired live on YouTube a week ago. One of their shows, they just put the whole thing on YouTube. I think it aired at like 12:30 in the morning Eastern time. I wouldn't have known about it if I didn't see Meltzer tweet that it was airing at 12:30 in the morning. So I have enjoyed what I've seen. You know, to have a Stardom match air as part of the main card for the first time and not as a dark match attraction for the live crowd was a very big deal. That was a very big deal for Joshi Wrestling. It was Tam Nakano and Saya Kamitani against Mayu Iwatani and Starlight Kid. Kamitani wins it with a Phoenix Splash. I enjoyed it. I don't know of their storylines or anything, but the action was good. There was a Pro Wrestling Noah invasion with Keiji Muto leading probably, I'd say, 24 or so Noah talents to the ring to promote last night's New Japan vs. Noah event. That was technically considered Wrestle Kingdom Night 3. Not at the Tokyo Dome. They had a show at the Yokohama Arena. I was going to try to watch it. I was going to try to watch the New Japan vs. Noah show and... did not realize, I just assumed it was going to be airing on New Japan World, and in fact, it did not air on New Japan World. It aired on some Japanese pay-per-view service, Abema, whatever it's called. Fuck that. I think it's hitting New Japan World in a week on delay. I will watch it then. I will watch it then, and if I have any thoughts on it, I'll talk about it on the sound, though. But I did not see Night 3 because I did not have access to it. But... we had L.I.J. came down to the ring with all these Noah people in the ring. Here comes L.I.J. led by Shingo. And he's counting the number of guys that are in the ring. And he thought better of getting inside because they were clearly outnumbered. They had to do something to hype up the third night. This was their way of doing that. You know, if this was Raw, there would have been a giant brawl. But there's no point in doing a big brawl like that in front of a crowd that can only clap. It was a cool visual, though, seeing the entire Noah roster in the ring at the Dome. Sonata and Great O'Khan, I thought that was pretty dull. I thought Jeff Cobb would top Naito, but with Naito coming out at the end of the show to confront Okada, I can see why he won. They had a good match. Not the big showing for Cobb I thought it would be, because he came into the match hobbled with a knee injury. And you could tell just by watching him, the way he was hobbling on one leg every time he was thrown into the ropes, it was painful to watch. He hurt the knee in the six-man tag match on night one that he was in, so he was limited in what he could do. He had an MRI done the next day and was still waiting on the results to see how bad the damage is. Tanahashi and Kenta had a no-disqualification match with weapons. That was something we usually do not see on these Tokyo Dome shows, especially not in the semi-main. They had a garbage match with chairs and tables, the ladder, the kendo sticks. Can't forget the kendo sticks. Tanahashi even hit him in the head with a guitar at one point, like he was Jeff Jarrett. Or Jeff Jarrett stealing the Honky Tonk Man's gimmick. There was an avalanche falcon arrow to Tanahashi through a table, at which point Kenta grabbed another table and a gigantic ladder. This thing had to be every bit of 12 to 15 feet. Little did he know he was setting up the instrument of his own destruction. It was the only moment that I could remember from either night where we actually heard noise from the fans and not just clapping. There was an audible gasp when Tanahashi was teasing, pushing the ladder over with Kenta on it, which eventually he did, and Kenta crashed and burned face first onto a trash can in the ring. Instantly, he was bleeding, his eye was all fucked up and swelling up. Tanahashi placed him on the table in the ring, and he started climbing the ladder himself. And then he dove off, Shawn Michaels style from WrestleMania 10, arms outstretched, down through Kenta and the table. What a visual that was. What a visual it was seeing Kenta's blood smeared across that piece of table as Tanahashi crawled on top of him to regain the IWGP United States title. Kenta's eye was not his only injury coming out of the match. He suffered a dislocated left hip, a broken nose, tendon damage to his finger, and severe lacerations to his back on that Tanahashi splash off the ladder. So he was held off yesterday's New Japan versus Noah show. He was supposed to be part of Team Noah, in one of the matches. He did spend 14 years there. He won multiple titles before ever coming to New Japan. So Kenta is obviously very deeply connected to Pro Wrestling Noah. Now we can get that match with Tanahashi and Jon Moxley at some point, borders permitting. You know, this was every hardcore match these days, but those final few minutes I thought were great. And you know, I mentioned Shawn Michaels diving off the ladder at WrestleMania 10. I would not be surprised at all to find out that Tanahashi was thinking of Shawn Michaels when he did that spot. He was a huge Shawn Michaels fan. You know, before the G1 final a few years ago, he said that he was really nervous, and to calm himself down, he pictured Shawn Michaels in his mind. He called him his inspiration. I think he may have inspired that dive. Okada pulled another 4.5-star match out of his ass on Wednesday, 24 hours after doing the same thing on Tuesday. I think I like the Ospreay match a little bit more, but they were both pretty much on the same level. I loved the spot where Ospreay hit the standing shooting star, Okada got the knees up, sent Ospreay into the ropes, and Okada went for the dropkick, and the way that Ospreay caught him and delivered that powerbomb. Like, as soon as he came off the ropes, Ospreay just jumped into the air, you know, ass first, to catch Okada as he was coming down from that attempted dropkick. And just, it looked fucking great. What do they call that expression? The chef's kiss? That's what that was. I thought that was awesome. But in the end, it was Okada with the Rainmaker retaining the title. I said in my predictions, if Okada wins on night one, he retains on night two. But if he loses on night one, then Ospreay takes the title from Shingo on night two. So when Okada won on night one, I pretty much knew how this was going to go down. And right now, he is the champion that New Japan needs. I know it's, you know, LOL Okada again for a lot of people, but they need their biggest star in the driver's seat right now more than ever. And they have to hope that this COVID shit dies down enough to where they can start to claw back a lot of the momentum that they've lost. You know, not being able to fly in a lot of the foreign talent. It's ridiculous that we just had a Wrestle Kingdom and Jay White was sitting at home. A year ago after Wrestle Kingdom and that promo he cut, he was one of the most talked about names. And since then, nothing. Nothing. Now, it's not New Japan's fault. I think the issue is that he can't leave the States because of some kind of green card issue. But it's stuff like that. You know, Ibushi going down with an injury. Kota Ibushi wasn't even on the card. They've seemed very snake-bitten. Hopefully 2022 is kinder to them than 2021 was. So this was not on the level of past Wrestle Kingdom shows, but the main events on each night were absolute fire. I know this is going to be breaking news to a lot of people, but Okada is a very good professional wrestler. Now, every year on the Sound Off, we do the annual prediction show where we look back at what I got right and what I got wrong the previous year. And then I look into my crystal ball and gaze into wrestling's future in the present year. Today is the day. And first, let's look back at my predictions for 2021. Shout out to Byron from upstate New York for the assist. He always does a rundown for me on what I got right and wrong and then emails it to me and saves me some trouble. I predicted that Monday Night Raw would bottom out at 1.3 million viewers sometime in 2021. Instead, they bottomed out at 1.5 million. I was close, but there's still room for them to go down even more. I predicted that Daniel Bryan would win the Royal Rumble match, which did not happen, but would fall short in his Universal title match with Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. I hit the nail on the head with that one. I predicted that Rhea Ripley would debut on the Raw brand, which she did, and win the Women's Royal Rumble, which she almost did. She was the runner-up to Bianca Belair. I said that she would then beat Charlotte Flair at WrestleMania to win the Raw Women's Championship. I was half right. She did win the Raw Women's Championship, but she won it from Asuka, not from Charlotte. I predicted Edge against AJ Styles would happen at SummerSlam, and that the AJ and Omos pairing would be Nomos by then. That was wrong. Still waiting on that Edge and AJ match, by the way. Maybe we'll get it at WrestleMania this year. I predicted Ricochet would be the next WWE name to leave for AEW and that Aleister Black would not be far behind. So I was half right. I predicted that USA Network would move NXT off Wednesday nights, which did happen, but I thought it would be Thursdays that they would move to. Instead, they moved them to Tuesdays. I predicted that the Forbidden Portal, as I called it, would be opened between AEW and New Japan, and that the two sides would work together in some way, which did happen. I predicted Kenny Omega would wrestle Jon Moxley in a rematch for the AEW World title at Revolution and win, which he did. But I also said that Omega would not win the Impact World title from Rich Swann. Instead, he would beat Nick Aldis to win the NWA World Heavyweight title, which did not happen. I also didn't think that the NWA would survive the year. You know, with the pandemic and everything, I thought they were done. It was close. It was close there for a while. It was touch and go, but they held on. I predicted Hangman Adam Page would win the AEW World title from Kenny Omega at the Full Gear pay-per-view in November. Boy, I nailed that one. Right down to the date. I predicted Sting would wrestle three cinematic matches for AEW in 2021, teaming with Darby Allin against Team Taz, which did happen. But I also thought that he would do two singles matches, one with Chris Jericho and one with Cody Rhodes, which did not happen. I predicted Britt Baker would be the next AEW Women's Champion, which she was, and that Thunder Rosa would sign with AEW, which she did. I also said that she would be the one to beat Britt Baker for the title, and I still feel that way. I predicted that AEW would introduce new Trios titles and that Death Triangle would be Trios champions. That did not happen, but I do think Trios titles are on the way. I predicted that Miro, once all the best man stuff ran its course, would become TNT champion, which did happen. I thought Jungle Boy would hold TNT gold and have a breakout year. The TNT part didn't happen. I predicted Wardlow, once he breaks away from MJF and Sammy Guevara, both would be babyfaces before year's end. I was half right. I predicted AEW would finally do that blood and guts match they were supposed to do in 2020, which they did, albeit with different teams, and that AEW's second show would air on Saturdays at 6:05 on either TNT or TBS, and they went with Fridays instead. I predicted Jay White would stay with New Japan, which he did, but that he would defeat Jon Moxley for his IWGP United States Championship, which he did not, Kenta did, and that Jay White would make a run all the way to the G1 Climax Finals before losing to Okada. It was Kota Ibushi who lost to Okada, but I nailed the winner of the G1, so I'll take it. I'll take it. And finally, I predicted that Kota Ibushi would be IWGP champion through the rest of the year and that Okada would beat him at Wrestle Kingdom 16, which would set up Will Ospreay to then challenge Okada for the belt. Ibushi was injured. He did not wrestle at Wrestle Kingdom, but Ospreay did challenge Okada for the belt on night 2. So I was kind of right. So a mixed bag were my predictions for 2021. Let's try to do better with 2022. I predict that Bobby Lashley will beat Brock Lesnar to become WWE champion at the Royal Rumble with an assist, intended or otherwise, from Paul Heyman. Lesnar then enters the Bloodline. Lesnar then enters the Royal Rumble match. Later that night, he wins it. And he goes on to challenge Roman Reigns for the Universal title at WrestleMania. I predict that if Liv Morgan wins the triple threat match on Raw tomorrow night, she gets the shot at Becky Lynch and her Raw women's title at the Royal Rumble, that would free up Bianca Belair for her second straight Royal Rumble victory to challenge for the Raw women's championship at WrestleMania and get her revenge on Becky Lynch for embarrassing her in 26 seconds at SummerSlam. Bianca wins the Rumble. Alexa Bliss also enters the Royal Rumble and gets her revenge by being the one to eliminate Charlotte Flair from the match, given that Charlotte has announced her intention to be in the Rumble match. She will not win. She will be eliminated, though, by Alexa Bliss. but it's Sasha Banks, once she is back in 6 weeks from her foot injury and all healed up, who goes on to challenge Charlotte and win the SmackDown Women's title at WrestleMania, finally ending her losing streak there and bringing it back full circle in Dallas, the same city where she and Becky lost to Charlotte at WrestleMania 32. I predict that Randy Orton and Matt Riddle will defend the Raw Tag Team titles against and lose them to Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens at WrestleMania, who will start calling themselves Team RKO for Rollins and KO, just to annoy Randy Orton. I've been saying this since even before the day one pay-per-view about them going after the tag team belts. I predict that Austin Theory will be the man to take the United States Championship away from Damian Priest at WrestleMania, and Priest will be competing for the WWE Championship by the summer. I predict that Sean Waltman, who recently announced that he is going to be getting back into the ring in 2022, will have a spot waiting for him in the Men's Royal Rumble match as a surprise entrant. I predict the Women's Royal Rumble will not be the only time that we see Mickie James back on WWE television this year when they induct her into their 2022 Hall of Fame class. I predict that Bron Breakker will be on Raw or SmackDown no later than the draft in October, as will Walter and Imperium, and they won't be the only ones moving on. I cannot imagine that USA Network is thrilled about NXT drawing 600,000 viewers on a Tuesday night. I don't think NXT 2.0 survives the year in its current slot. It either gets moved to a different time, or it gets bumped altogether and ends up on Peacock. On the AEW side, Tony Khan can't sign everybody, but that doesn't mean he's done signing people. I think Keith Lee, Killer Cross and Scarlett, Johnny Gargano, and Ember Moon all end up in AEW. And yes, Samoa Joe will work for the same company as CM Punk and Bryan Danielson. And what a three-way dance that would be. I predict that CM Punk and MJF will meet for the first time at Revolution in March, with MJF handing Punk his first loss in AEW, and then going on to beat Hangman Adam Page to win the AEW World title at Double or Nothing. On that same show, Darby Allin defeats Bryan Danielson, and later in the year, climbs back into the ring with MJF again, and this time, Darby beats MJF to win the AEW World title. From one pillar to another. But before that, as they build to Darby and MJF, Sting is going to get his first and only shot at the AEW World Championship, either on a major episode of Dynamite or on one of these quarterly live TNT specials. MJF will put his title on the line against Sting. And they'll tug at the heartstrings of all the little stingers and the big stingers who want to see him hold the gold one last time. But MJF breaks their hearts, and he pins him. Sting Jr., though, he will avenge his father and his loss to MJF at Full Gear a few months ago. CM Punk, meanwhile, will feud with Jon Moxley. Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks will face off with Adam Cole, Bobby Fish, and Kyle O'Reilly in a blood and guts match. And not long after, Omega will return to babyface mode. Hook, I predict, will win the TNT Championship from Cody Rhodes. And I feel like Double or Nothing is the time that it's going to happen. But Hook will wear TNT gold, and I believe he will take it from Cody. I predict that Jamie Hayter will very shortly split away from Britt Baker and challenge her for the AEW Women's Championship at Revolution in March, but will lose because it will be Thunder Rosa unseating Britt Baker at Double or Nothing to win the championship. I predict that Santana and Ortiz will finally win AEW Tag Team Gold in 2022, and that Jeff Hardy will make his AEW debut and reunite the Hardy Boys. I predict that the Briscoes, Jay and Mark, will come to AEW for a match against FTR. And I do believe that this will be the year that Trios titles are finally introduced in AEW. I wasn't sold on the idea of just handing the Owen Hart Cup trophy to Brian Pillman Jr. just based off, you know, his name alone. But without knowing yet who's even going to be in the tournament, I keep coming back to his name, and what a great story it would be for him to scratch and claw his way to the finals and win it. I think we see people like Sammy Guevara and Daniel Garcia, you know, find success in that tournament. But I'm going to go with Brian Pillman Jr. to win the Owen, as they're calling it. And I've got Chris Statlander winning the Owens Cup on the women's side. I predict that AEW will run a stadium show in the UK this year and will do so at Craven Cottage, which is a place that Tony Khan has talked about before. I think this is the year it happens. This will also be the year that we see several AEW talent departures. Not mass cuts like WWE does, where they just indiscriminately fire dozens of people. But rather, Tony Khan will simply allow certain contracts to expire for people that they're not actively using. You know, their roster has grown very large. There does come a breaking point where you look at the roster, if you want to continue to bring in more people. And it's you know, they're in buying mode. You know, it's, you think about a buy or sell market. It's a buying market for Tony Khan still. If they want to bring in more names because the free agent market is still pretty rich, especially with people that WWE got rid of, then there are inevitably going to be names that fall to the wayside. You know, Brian Cage is an obvious one. They haven't done anything with him since he left Team Taz. I don't think he will be in AEW before this year is over anymore. I don't know what the contract status is for others there, but I think when their deals come due, it's going to be a case where they're going to quietly not be renewed. But we're not going to see anything on the scale of what WWE has been doing. But there is going to come a breaking point. You know, Tony Khan is going to have to make some tough decisions, and I think this is the year where he's got to start making those decisions. The Rainmaker, Kazuchika Okada, will return to the United States later this year to wrestle his first match in an AEW ring against the American Dragon, Bryan Danielson. I wanted to say Danielson in the G1. I really want to see Danielson in the G1, but the G1 is such a time commitment. I mean, that we're not talking about one show or one quick tour. And I just don't know that, you know, someone, you know, a big name like him, that Tony Khan is going to want to be without him for, you know, weeks at a time. But I do believe we'll get Okada in the U.S., and I think we're going to get Okada against Danielson. But only after Okada loses the IWGP title. And finally, your G1 Climax winner for 2022 is going to be Will Ospreay. I don't know what's going on with Jay White. He's still stuck in the States, I believe. I thought about going with him, but Ospreay just feels like the most likely choice. And those are your predictions for 2022. Let me know what you think. Let me know if you agree, if you disagree. And when this goes up on YouTube, hit the comment section. And let me know your predictions for WWE and AEW or Impact or Ring of Honor or New Japan. Let me know what you guys think. We had a lot of content this week, a lot of streaming. Streamed on Monday, streamed on Tuesday, streamed on Wednesday, streamed on Friday. Covered a lot of stuff on the podcast today. But if you missed any of those streams, the audio was pushed out to the feed as well. But I do encourage you to also go back, give the video a view and a like on YouTube. It helps the channel when you do so. I finished Squid Game on Netflix last night. Absolutely loved it. And now I'm on this Korean binge. I'm looking for similar shows to watch. I heard about Alice in Borderland. I tweeted that out last night. You guys came back at me with some recommendations. I'm going to start on that next and see if I like it. But somebody asked me, you know, do you watch them with the closed captions or do you watch the English dub? I always watch these shows with the English subtitles. I do not go with the English voiceovers, the dubs. Never watch any foreign show or movie with the English dubs. It just sucks. You got to hear the actors in their own voices or else it's just not the same. It doesn't matter, too. I mean, a lot of the shows I've watched, especially on Netflix, you know, Spanish, German, you know, in this case, it was Korean. There's other shows in other languages. I watched that show Elves that came out, was it last month? It was like about these killer elves. I forgot what language it was, Danish or whatever it was. Same thing. You know, you gotta hear the actors in their own voices and accents. And I guess some people, they don't like to read the subtitles. It's distracting or whatever. I never found that to be the case. But I love Squid Game. I'm looking for other similar types of shows now. So if you've got any recommendations, by all means, send them my way. Follow me on Twitter, at Solomonster. I'm going to be live with you back on YouTube on Wednesday night for AEW Dynamite. Again, there will be no Friday night stream this week because I will be covering the House of Glory show, doing commentary for the all-women show, one-night-only women's tournament to crown a brand-new House of Glory women's champion. The field is set. Who will walk away with the championship? Even I don't know. And I like it that way. I call it like I see it. It's going to be a lot of fun. Until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week. I will be back with episode 739 next Sunday. Until then, take care, guys.
The Solomonster sounds off.
Beth Phoenix is standing in the aisle. She is making these over the top. She's mean mugging the camera, and she's just standing there. Thank God Kevin Dunn played her music, or else she might still be standing there. Poor woman was like, she was frozen, like she was trapped in carbonite or something. I don't know what was going on.
The Solomonster sounds off, each week bursting with content. Podcasts, predictions, reviews, YouTube live streams, and more. Become a channel member for perks and follow the Solomonster on Twitter at Solomonster.
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 Solomonster sounds off.